Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission notifies officials of the outgoing administration of President Weah to declare their assets.
This is in keeping with Section 10.1 of the Code of Conduct that requires public officials and employees of government to declare their assets.
The East African Court of Justice rejects a challenge to the multi-billion dollar oil pipeline in Tanzania and Uganda. South Sudan's president tells state governors to implement a 2018 peace deal as the country prepares for elections. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken heads back to Israel today, Thursday. The European Union will not deploy election observers in the Democratic Republic of Congo because of continuing violence there.
The upcoming elections, to give credibility to the process, the European Union should have been involved because that would give credibility to the process.
And a Palestinian restaurant in New York brings Jews and Palestinians together. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission, the LACC, has notified officials of the outgoing administration of President George Weah to declare their assets before leaving office. Chairperson Alexandra Kwamezo says the proper forms must be submitted by Tuesday, December 12. She said that while the judiciary branch of government has been cooperative, the executive and legislative branches have not been forthcoming during the 6 years of the Weah administration. Chairperson Kwamezo tells me the commission has powers under its new directive to recommend sanctions to the national legislation for non-cooperative officials.
This is in keeping with Section 10.1 of the Code of Conduct that requires public officials and employees of government to declare their assets. Over the past 6 years, government officials have not really declared their assets. The judiciary has been forthcoming, but the legislative and the executive members of those branches of government have not declared their assets. And so we thought it wise to issue this notice reminding outgoing officials to declare their assets before exiting office.
If these officials did not declare their assets for the past 6 years, why did you not make them do it?
Okay, so the new LACC right now is being headed by a new board of commissioners in keeping with the new LACC Act that came into law in 2022. The new board of commissioners took over in September of this year. We took over on September 18th, and part of our first 100 days activities includes the reminder for declaration of assets. I believe my predecessor made effort in that area. However, it doesn't hurt for us who have now taken over to again reach out to those officials to remind them. We are making the effort to reach out to public officials because now there's going to be a transition of government. We have new government coming in, and we have officials that will be exiting. So we believe that now is the time to reach out to exiting government officials to remind them to declare their assets.
Madam, did you say that it is the legislative and the executive branches of government that have not been forthcoming? If that is the case, then can we say that it's the entire Liberian government that has not been cooperating?
Well, we wouldn't say that it's the entire government, but what we do know is that the records before us shows that the legislative branch and the executive branch have really not been forthcoming. And even the judiciary, we still have individuals who have not declared. And so this is the reason why we are reaching out to all branches of government to proceed to the LACC by or before December 12th.
What is the likelihood that these officials will heed your advice, and what powers do you have in case they do not heed your advice?
Thank you. So the new LACC Act has given the LACC the power to recommend sanctions to to the legislature. We are taking steps to draw up sanctions. We will also take note of the fact that after December 12th, we will compile a listing of violators and publish. We'll also reach out to them individually. We will send out citations to them and reach out to them and give them that opportunity to declare. We have the power to cite individuals. We have the power to also recommend sanctions, and we have sanctions in keeping with the code of conduct. So we are going to make use of those sanctions that are available to us and enforce them against non-compliant public officials and employees of government who fail to declare.
Councillor Zhou, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Alexandra Kwamenzo is the chair of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission. She was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. The European Union said on Wednesday it cannot deploy election observers in the Democratic Republic of Congo because of continuing violence there. An EU spokesperson told the French news agency, the AFP, that due to security reasons, making long-term observation was impossible. Bulengwa Zihindura is the president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in DRC and a former spokesperson for President Joseph Kabila. He tells VOA's Douglas Umpuga that the EU decision was not the right one.
Well, that's a decision they have taken, and I think it's not the right decision because with the upcoming elections, to give credibility to the process, the European Union should have been involved because that would give credibility to the process. Otherwise, this would become a problem with the upcoming election.
But they cite violence there for their failure to go. Isn't that a valid concern?
Yes, to a certain extent, yes, that is a valid concern, the prospect of violence, and also because the process now, the electoral process in the Congo right now, lacks credibility. You know, there's been a lot of problems, especially with the opposition, and I think the process lacks credibility. And that's one other reason why the EU should have been involved to try to put pressure on these elections. Otherwise, we may face a more catastrophic situation because of the lack of international observers like the European Union.
Talking of the security situation, given what's happening in the eastern part of the country, do you think the credible and fair election is possible?
Yeah, I mean, we've had that process like that all over the world. And I think the problem of not holding elections in the Congo is worse. Because when we have a security situation like we have in the East, you know the story of Colombia where they had elections, even though some part of the country we could not have elections. I think it would be worse not having elections than holding elections right now. You know, this can happen. But this should not be a reason not to hold elections.
Given all these challenges, how do you think CENI is going to navigate to at least try to hold a free and fair election?
There's a lot of issues with voter registration cards, because most of these registration cards, you know, you cannot even see the name anymore. So there is a lot of issues that should have been fixed even before we were into this process of holding elections. So what I would like to add is that, you know, people right now in the Congo need free and fair elections. And I think the government needs to allow other candidates to move around the country and so on and so forth. And it goes with the credibility of the country. It goes for the future of the country. Without elections in the country, we are going back years. You know, at the time of President Kabila, we held free and fair elections. And so we need that process to continue if we want to keep our country together.
Mulengwa Zihindura is the president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in the DRC and a former spokesperson for President Joseph Kabila. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Umpuga from Kansas City, U.S. The East African Court of Justice has rejected a challenge to the multi-billion-dollar oil pipeline in Tanzania and Uganda. The court said it does not have jurisdiction to hear the case. The petition was brought by environmentalists who say the project will harm the ecosystems in areas rich in biodiversity as well as the livelihoods of local people. The pipeline is part of a $10 billion project led by French energy giant Total Energy to develop Uganda oil fields and ship the crude to Tanzania for export. Frank Tumusime is a senior researcher at Advocates for Natural Resources and Development in Uganda. He tells me that while the plaintiffs have a good case, they didn't have enough time to prepare.
This case was brought on fundamental principles of protecting the integrity of the environment in line with, the known principles of precaution, prevention. But unfortunately, I think there was omission, which is common in cases. Technicalities were the biggest challenge in this matter, whereby you must file a case within 2 months. So when you compute from 2017, when the intergovernmental host agreement was signed, and yet the case was filed almost 3 years later, they were out of time to file their good case. They had a good case, but they were out of time. And so you really find that such a good case has gone unattended to, that there was no opportunity to enable the court to investigate and inquire into the various international environmental principles that were so important in guiding, the countries, the host countries of the ECOP, in as far as the integrity of Mother Earth and protection of the environment, land, human people, their well-being and all that is concerned.
Even though the court said that the lawsuit was brought too late, is there a possibility to appeal? And where to?
Yeah, they can appeal. There's an appellate chamber, the upper chamber. There's that possibility of appeal. But given the ruling, it's a tough order to get a favorable outcome. Because you see, the ruling is based on the fact that time had lapsed for them within which to bring the appeal. And you see, the court consistently says that, look, we don't have the power to extend time within which to file your case. But probably it is something they can test in the upper chamber, because this is a case of great, environmental jurisprudential importance, that if it's adjudicated upon, then it can set various principles to rest.
Now, you mentioned the environmental concerns for which this lawsuit was brought. On the other hand, the economic benefit of this pipeline, which has been touted by President Museveni, I wonder, people might be thinking maybe there's something else behind the ruling than just being too late.
No, I think having read the ruling, the legal reasoning is okay. But you see, even if there are concerns, the point is sustainable development. You have to balance environmental conservation and development. And that's why one of their complaints was that, look, you want to commence the ECOP, East African Crude Oil Pipeline, you signed a government intergovernmental host agreement and host agreements without conducting a strategic environmental impact assessment. Because you see, it is in those strategic environmental impact assessments that that VOPA or the pipeline company will identify the risks involved, the environmental, social aspects and risks involved, and then they suggest mitigation measures.
Lawyer Frank Tumusime is a senior researcher at Advocates for Natural Resources and Development in Uganda. He was speaking with us from Kampala, Uganda. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 30th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. South Sudan President Salva Kiir this week told state governors to implement the 2018 peace deal and run their states according to the country's constitution. For VOA News, Mayang Devimayar reports from Juba.
President Salva Kiir made the remarks Tuesday at the annual governors' forum, which brought together 10 state governors and chief administrators of 3 administrative areas. Kiir told the state governors and chief administrators to follow the provisions of the 2018 peace deal as they run their respective states and administrative areas.
You are supposed to work as colleagues regardless of your political or personal differences. I will direct the high-level standing committee for the implementation of the agreement to set up a mechanism for the resolution of disputes so that we move forward together as partners in the implementation of the agreement and we move smoothly towards elections by December 2024.
Mr. Kiir stressed that the 2018 peace deal is the only way to build a strong foundation for a stable and democratic South Sudan. He says good governance could result into socio-economic recovery and prosperity for the people of South Sudan.
There is no need to engage in activities that will destroy our country and harm our people. We are establishing South Sudan as a democratic country. Anybody who wants to become a president has the right to organize their party and contest peacefully without violence.
The president says he is concerned about the way some of the governors are running their states.
I am reliably informed that some of you do not govern your states according to the constitution and the law. Apparently, some of you do not hold cabinet meetings. There are conflicts between the executive and the state assemblies, which makes the state unstable.
President assumed the chairmanship of the East African Community last week. He calls on state governors to ensure that peace prevails across the country to make his leadership of the regional bloc a success. Speaking at the same event, Nicholas Esom, UN Special Representative of the Secretary General and head of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, calls on governors to use the forum to consolidate peace and stability in South Sudan.
UNMISS hopes that this week's forum will offer a platform for problem solving on the challenges that you face before you as a nation as you enter your final year of your transition.
The annual Governors Forum is organized by the Office of the President with support from United Nations Development Program, or UNDP. The forum is the highest policy platform that brings together governors to discuss policy issues around governance and democratic principles. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken heads back to Israel on Thursday. He says he will work to help prolong a ceasefire so more hostages can be released and more humanitarian aid can be delivered to Gaza. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Singh reports.
A yacht restaurant in the East Village is Manhattan's latest hotspot. Owner Abdul Ulanani says his restaurant has several locations in the suburbs of the Big Apple. But he always wanted to bring Palestinian cuisine to the heart of New York City.
I felt like there was a need for that because there wasn't many. I haven't seen any restaurant that's labeled Palestinian. You'll see Iranian, Persian.
In Brussels, at a NATO foreign ministers meeting, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken acknowledged that some have questioned whether the U.S. and other NATO allies should continue to stand with Ukraine almost 2 years after Russia's full-scale invasion.
But the answer here today at NATO is clear and it's unwavering. We must and we will continue to support Ukraine.
Blinken sought to reassure allies concerned that some Republican lawmakers in the U.S. Congress are reluctant to keep funding robust military aid for Ukraine. He said Speaker of the House Mike Johnson had spoken about the need to fund Kyiv recently, which Blinken called encouraging. One analyst told VOA additional funding for Ukraine is not in Blinken's hands.
There's not a great deal that Secretary Blinken from the executive branch can do about that. It's really in the hands of the legislature, a co-equal branch of government, and the Republican Party is sort of ironing out its differences, or not ironing out its differences as we speak.
Kimmage told VOA that Blinken is sending a strong message by attending meetings of NATO and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, during the Israel-Hamas war.
And there is a kind of allegation out there or a claim out there that the U.S. has now shifted attention to the Middle East and is doing less to engage with Europe. I think that Secretary Blinken, in going both to the NATO and the OSCE meetings, is very firmly trying to signal that the U.S. remains focused on Europe.
Blinken returns to the Middle East for talks Thursday and Friday, the third time since the militant group Hamas triggered the war with its October 7th attack on Israel. Blinken said he would work to prolong the truce so more Israeli hostages can be released and more humanitarian aid can be delivered to Palestinian civilians in Gaza who desperately need it. Blinken plans to visit Israel, Ramallah in the West Bank, and the United Arab Emirates. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Following the October 7th attacks in Israel, both Palestinians and Israelis are ill at ease. In Manhattan, one restaurant is uniting the two groups despite their differences. Johnny Fernandez reports from New York City.
A Yacht restaurant in the East Village is Manhattan's latest hotspot. Owner Abdul Ilanani says his restaurant has several locations in the suburbs of the Big Apple. But he always wanted to bring Palestinian cuisine to the heart of New York City.
I felt like there was a need for that because there wasn't many. I haven't seen any restaurant that's labeled Palestinian. You'll see Iranian, Persian, Pakistani, Desi, Indian, but never actually Palestinian.
But his timing was off. He opened the new location just days after the Hamas attacks of October 7th in Israel. His business experienced a serious backlash online, coming primarily from Israel.
The beginning was bad. We were getting a lot of hate messages, one-star reviews.
Ilanani believes the negative reactions were provoked by an online post he wrote about the situation in Gaza.
I just posted about how, like, all these mothers are losing their children. I'm a brand new father. We just had a baby October 20. And I just can't imagine for a single second losing my baby now.
Help came from where Ilanani least expected it. Some members of the Jewish community stepped up to support the restaurant.
Yes, I'm Jewish. Yep. I'm Ashkenazi and Sephardic. My mom is a Jew from Libya, and my dad is Ashkenazi from Eastern Europe.
New York City pediatrician Michael Harris is a frequent customer. He says he loves the restaurant, although he disagrees with political messages some of its decor might carry.
It was a little upsetting, some of the things on the menu. I don't know if you've seen the menu. It says, from the river to the sea, which does call for a Palestinian state, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, which essentially would dismantle Israel and the Jewish state. So that I didn't love.
Despite that, he says he wants to live in harmony with his neighbors.
I think coexistence, I think dialogue, I think accepting the other, and I think just recognizing the legitimate rights of both sides to their own country and state.
Ilanani says the decor and many words are left for interpretation.
Some people interpret it as a way where it's like kick out all the Jews and just keep it as a full Palestinian state. That was not my interpretation. When I looked it up, it literally meant freedom for Palestinians.
Lindsay Weiss is another Jewish New Yorker who says her curiosity to learn more about the Palestinian culture keeps her coming back.
Coming into a Palestinian restaurant, a Palestinian space, and enjoying Palestinian food and culture gets us closer to imagining what that multicultural, peaceful place might look like.
She believes Jewish and Palestinian groups have more similarities than differences, and food is the one element bringing both groups together.
Food is really important, so I think coming from that place of common ground and exchanging our cultures and putting them in conversation with each other and realizing that, again, we have so much more in common than we have different. And our goals are actually much more in common than they are different.
In a time when peaceful relations seem hard to imagine, this restaurant is showing how two communities can coexist and work together. Johnny Fernandez, VOA News, New York.
And that's it for this Thursday, November 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton, Washington, saying have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.